It is Monday, August 18th. This is LA Podcast. My name is Alyssa Walker.
I'm Rachel Reyes.
And I'm Mike Bonin.
And it is the back to school season. I know it seems early for people who don't have children. LAUSD started on Thursday for just 2 days. So we go for like Thursday and Friday, and then we get a nice short week to like, you know, ease into it. But I think most schools are starting. If they haven't started this week, they'll start probably next week, maybe the next. So we're all in this next phase of our occupation where, I mean, at least for the families at our school, this was the same kind of switch that we saw at the beginning of the siege, because remember, it happened the week before school ended for LAUSD. So we had graduations and we kind of had to get through those last few days and then figure out what to do with our kids for the summer. Now we're sending our kids back to school in this still very scary environment.
This Orwellian hellscape.
What a wonderful thing we can teach kids about in the future. And what was really striking, I think, for me taking my kids back, and you probably saw this all over the city if you were, you know, heading around town on Thursday, out in front of every school, almost like a wall, almost like a different type of occupation, right, was happening. Mm-hmm. There were educators, there were union members, there were community members, there were volunteers who had been doing patrols in the neighborhoods around schools. Everybody was out in front holding signs, cheering, waving, saying, "You're welcome here." You're already emotional on the first day of school, but this was like triple emotional just to see what was happening. And this was part of a big partnership between, you know, not just LAUSD, who's been good on this. We've been talking about it since the spring, but the mayor, Mayor Bass, also held a press conference where they talked about what they were doing and what were some of the things that we saw. I mean, again, it did seem like some of these students had been targeted and schools had been targeted in a way.
Students have been targeted. You know, there was a 17-year-old honor student at Miguel Contreras High School who was snatched up. We had a 15-year-old with severe disabilities who was in a car outside of our Lita High School, and he got snatched and eventually released. And this is ongoing. I mean, remember, we have that middle school kid from Torrance who got deported to Honduras back in June. It's surreal, and I'm struck by so many radically different experiences that are suddenly happening for our kids and in our schools. 2 years ago, schools were trying to get parents to volunteer to chaperone a field trip or to assistant coach a soccer team. Now schools are asking for volunteers, parent volunteers, to stand outside the schools and protect their kids from masked kidnappers. They talked, our superintendent, Alberto Cavallo, who I think is doing a phenomenal job.
He's doing great. He really is.
Spoke the other day about creating safe passages for students to school. I remember when safe passage programs were created to keep kids safe from gang influence or gang violence 20 years ago. Now we have safe passages to protect kids from their own federal government and this increasingly clear to me. I mean, this isn't even an occupation. It's martial law, and that's what we're getting into.
Yeah, I mean the going back to, I guess, like the definition of, you know, safe, getting to school safely, right? So what we've talked about a lot on this show and what we're going to talk about later in the episode is, you know, safe routes to school, which is preventing traffic deaths. Kids are uniquely vulnerable. We have, you know, at the same time, the mayor is kind of talking about these safety improvements that have been made around some of the campuses, not that they've been like super comprehensive or anything like that, but mentioning some of the things that they've been doing and trying to get things like more crossing guards for, helping kids just cross dangerous streets around schools. It is just such a a remarkable moment that we have, like, quote unquote, safety patrols, right, to protect the kids from the federal government, in addition to everything else. You know, it's dangerous drivers are still a problem. Like, all these other things are, you know, these are still issues. It made me think a lot, too, about, you know, our school, most of the kids walk to school. You know, we have a really awesome culture that's, like, very, you know, in front of the school. Everybody's kind of walking in and out and saying hello to people. But I wondered if more people were driving because they don't want to get out of their cars because they're worried about what will happen. So that we're creating all these other negative externalities, putting, you know, perhaps more pressure in our streets and more kids in danger. And that's, I thought that was very stressful for our, you know, a crossing guard, for example, to be like, oh, and in addition to all of that, keep an eye out for these unmarked federal vehicles that might be rolling up.
Well, and to LAUSD's credit, they've been expanding and modifying how they do bus transportation to school. Right, they announced that they are, I mean, they're basically doing, like, personal pickups now for families that are afraid.
I asked some families, though, about whether or not how quickly they were able to actually get, and it still seems to be like they're working it out. I hope it is the case. But they did guarantee that anyone who wanted bus transportation last year could have it.
Yep.
Just like in general, not just because of this, but just because of part of their commitment. But I was here still hearing from people that I think they were trying to figure out how to, because it's going to be an extra cost. And again, like, all these things cost money, not, of course, the volunteer support that's happening, but, like, this is more resources, more hours out of the day that teachers have to do this shit instead of preparing for their classes.
Yeah. Yep. And UTLA has been pushing for the school district to do more. And I think the school district is doing a lot. But among the things they were asking for are food and personal care items to undocumented families that are sheltering in place in their homes, virtual learning options for students who are afraid to attend school in person because of immigration raids. When's the last time those two things happened?
Right. I mean, Rachel, you called it the very first week that we were talking about this.
Yeah, I was happy to see, one, that they are offering and saying to families, like, this is an option you have if it's most comfortable for you. I know a lot of people who are sheltering in place, and I'm happy that they're offering that as a viable option for folks, and I'm happy that people are taking it. There's a 7% increase in signups for the LAUSD Virtual Academy. I think that's amazing. I think we should continue to build out that type of infrastructure across our city and county, because we know that this occupation is not going away. We're seeing it spread to other cities. And so how can we, as a city and a county, be a model for this type of resistance, right? It's nonviolent resistance. It's a way to keep kids in school, keep them engaged, and keep them safe, most importantly, so that we don't see more kids being deported. And Mike, you very thoughtfully named two students already, but we don't know how many other kids have been kidnapped. We don't know where they are because they are minors. And because no one is accountable to tracking any of these people.
And how many get snatched up when their parents are going for an immigration appointment?
Immigration appointment, hospital visits, any time that their parents have to be in public, right? And I just really feel for any students who might not have a parent right now, or might be down a parent because their parent got kidnapped. What are we doing for those kids, you know? So anyway, I'm happy to see that LAUSD has built out this online infrastructure. I would love to see that replicated once again, right? Because this isn't new to us. We did this 5 years ago. The county and the city should still legally have their injury and illness prevention plan, IIPP, ready to go. They can fire that up at any time. And it should have continued to be updated again legally for the last 5 years. So there are things that we can deploy. I think this all counts as an injury that can be prevented. So I would love to see more of our online infrastructure replicated once again in order to protect our students and their families.
I can't help but think that 5 years ago, people were forced into online learning, and the school district was forced into providing food and supplies for people as a result of a global pandemic. Now we're replicating a lot of those things because of like this federal reign of terror. I mean, it's so sick. It's hard to even describe.
Mm-hmm. And the same person in charge.
I mean, yeah.
Same.
Rachel, you had a good question, I think, before we started recording about the role of LAUSD school police here, because this was this came up like at the beginning, early on when they announced their plans, very proactive plans, I think as early as like November. And let's not forget, too, LAUSD also did this in 2017, the first time Trump came into office. Like there was a huge campaign. It's not like we're building upon what we don't know. We are building upon an experience that we already had. And it's a good question. Like is having school police, are they maybe playing a slightly different role than the way we've seen like LAPD? But it's important to note that the school police staff was actually dramatically cut in 2020. One of the few places that actually did take action was the school board of LAUSD. And those numbers have been so dramatically reduced that you do sometimes hear from school leadership like, oh, well, we need more help patrolling our schools and taking whatever kind of law enforcement action is needed for schools. And things do happen, I suppose. But I kind of love that we're in the position we're in now where volunteers are doing this and are being welcomed by the union and by the schools and by the community to step up and do maybe what we should all be doing for our local schools. So, I mean, I don't know. I think it's good.
I mean, there was a multi-year effort even before the murder of George Floyd by organizations like Students Deserve and others to get policing out of LAUSD. There were generations of kids who felt that they were being racially profiled and harassed and targeted, and it was an unsafe learning environment. And so it was a big push to get them out. And so it's so fucked up that what people were objecting to a few years ago is now by some considered to be the safe harbor against our reality. The other thing that strikes me is when LAUSD reduced funding for the LAUSD police force, they actually reinvested it in things people were asking for.
They did.
So a couple places where that funding has gone has been in environmental programs, teaching students about sustainability, environmental racism, and in things like expanding or implementing the Black Student Achievement Plan. So if as a result of these ICE invasions, the pushes to increase policing at LAUSD, Trump gets what he wants, because then we're cutting money for sustainability.
Well, isn't he already taking the money away for those programs
anyway? Exactly.
Yeah, they're already targeted. No, it's such a good point. And it should be noted too, like over the summer, there was a whole series of funding crises because we were going to, you know, take apart the Department of Education and a lot of Title I funding was going away. So,
yeah, it's just to me a microcosm of how we handle quote unquote crime or problems in the city. We just give more money to the cops and hope that will keep the streets clean and the air clean and the water clean. Somehow that doesn't make any sense, right? Like we know that. And I know from personal experience, I went to schools that had school police. But I grew up in that sweet spot where like we still had a garden in middle school and we had cops and we had art classes. Like we still kind of had all of the things that we need. Whereas now it seems like all of the other like fun parts of school got stripped down to just kind of be this really like school to prison pipeline. I think removing the school police was a fantastic idea. Putting them back would be obviously a harmful choice to students in this moment, especially. And I think this would be a really wonderful moment to expand upon what we saw on the first day of school. Look, I'm a remote worker. I could totally be an escort in the mornings before school and still get to work on time. I could take my lunch break when school ends and like help people get to the bus. And like, I'm happy to get a background check. I'm happy to get trained by the union and like do what needs to be done. I think a lot of people would love to do that and really build out beyond this like first day, first couple of weeks. and just kind of be tapped into that type of community defense, right? I think it's a really important way to show our students, like, I don't know, I've just been thinking about like the motivations to defend ourselves and defend our communities. Like, and I think this is like a soft way of doing that, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not asking people to take up arms, but we're asking you to show up for your neighbors in this like really simple way. Like, just be another adult and another body that's there. And that is communicating to our students of all ages, like, you are welcome here, you are safe, and there's plenty of people here to help you. And I am hanging on to these like softer ways of defending ourselves in our communities as just like a way to soften myself in this moment. So I would love to see this continued and built out and just like become part of how our schools operate and how our communities operate going forward. Because it is true. It's a lot on a crossing guard.
Well, yeah. And you're making me think of like maybe the crossing guard is the official role. And then we, you know, we have people that help teachers who come out and help and staff who come out. But like the people who are like sitting on their front porches who we see when we walk to school every day, they're part of that. You know, we're all part of the same network. And you're also making me think about school streets. So this is something that's been Paris did this ahead of the Olympics. They put in like 300 school streets where they closed the streets in front of schools and made them into these, you know, public plazas where you can just hang out before or after school, or you could play, or, you know, it's a little bit of green space that's completely protected from cars, but it's also protected from an SUV who might pull up and try to kidnap someone.
A Penske truck
that might roll up. So you're making me think it's all part of the same.
It's
all part of the same solution. That's kind of beautiful. Thank you, Rachel.
It really is.
Well, one place we will need to direct our care networks towards is the Japanese American National Museum, which once again saw itself on the international stage, also on the first day of school, like an hour or two after drop-off. Gavin Newsom held a press conference to announce his redistricting plan, which you guys talked about on last week's episode so wonderfully. Great timing on that. Good, because we knew that it was about to become a very big deal. And lo and behold, who rolls up but our buddies? Well, did they walk even? I feel like they're right around the corner. Did they still have to drive, even though they were all at the detention center around on Alameda, but they still had to drive their vehicles like one block to have this big like ice parade? And they drove up on the fucking pedestrian plaza, which absolutely infuriates me. Like, we can't be protected by school streets if they're just going to drive up on the pedestrian plaza. Okay, so what happened? What happened yesterday, Mike?
So Gavin Newsom chose the Japanese American Museum as the site of a press conference where it looked like every Democrat in California was present.
Astonishing,
Members of Congress, U.S. senators, state legislators, labor leaders, David Huerta, who had been, you know, arrested by the feds earlier this year. Everybody was there. It was a massive show of force saying that we are not going to allow this administration to dismantle democracy.
And it's not just at the museum. There's like a secondary building, which is literally called the National Center for the Preservation of Democracy.
National Center for the Preservation of Democracy. And it's the place where we gather people together to talk about difficult issues, issues that relate to race, identity, social justice, and the fragility of democracy.
Which has this cool like space where everybody was standing, just to underline that, because it's very meaningful.
And if I'm not mistaken, you know, this location is also where members of the Japanese American community were gathered and transported.
Because this is where in 1942, LA's Japanese American families were forced to board the buses that took them to the incarceration camps for the duration of the war. So for us here at the museum, this is hallowed ground. For us here at the Democracy Center, this is the ground zero point, one of the ground zero points in the civil rights history of this country. And we should note that what happened in 1942...
Right, so this is a very, very meaningful place. And while this was happening, Greg Bovino, the Border Patrol guy who's been running all of these raids, he and his masked stormtroopers, I mean, they're like cut-rate, you know, stormtroopers from Star Wars. You can't see their faces. They
that you guys arrest
up.
People right outside of Governor Newsom's press conference? Is this really just a show of power?
Breaking the law is not coincidental. Breaking the law is breaking the law. There's no coincidence. That's it. Thank y'all. Thank you.
I got to say, Gavin Newsom, who I have such conflicted feelings about.
Yeah, this is a good Gav, this is a bad Gav.
I mean, when he's good, he's really
he's
freaking
good,
great.
And right
really
outside, at this exact moment, are dozens and dozens of ICE agents. You think it's coincidental?
No.
Donald Trump and his minions, Tom Homan, tough guy, clearly decided, coincidentally or not, that this was a location to advance ICE arrests. Was certainly indiscriminate when a 15-year-old disabled boy had a gun put to his head in Los Angeles trying to go to school just a few days ago.
And not only was he leading the charge in pushing this redistricting fight back, but he afterwards, I mean, I thought what he said afterwards was so spot on. He said, if you want to know what the Trump administration is about, this is a perfect
example. He made the
example.
Point we're making. Not only is he rigging the election, he's trying to ruin and wreck democracy. He's no longer even feigning that he has dictatorial tendencies or authoritarian tendencies. He's acting out on them. It was an act of intimidation. It was an act, however, of weakness. Why else would you send them out? How pathetic, how small. And it's a sign of things to come. And I assure you, what you saw today, what happened here today, is going to happen tomorrow in a town near you.
And his message was, America, wake up. We're not going to have a democracy left.
Which we've heard before. Yep. Which we've heard before
yep.
from Anisis. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
After MacArthur Park. Yeah, this was, I mean, the images of this press conference, and we'll put it in the show notes, and the people who came up and spoke from, you know, like you said, labor leaders and tons of representatives, just all standing behind him. It was like a pep rally for democracy,
yeah.
you know, California democracy. And yes, of course, after we saw this happen, you saw Mayor Bass come out again, you know, and really in that same MacArthur Park style, just get furious.
Mayor Bass, you're live on NBC4 right now. You do not believe that this just happened to be a coincidence.
There is no way this was a coincidence. This was widely publicized that the governor and many of our other elected officials were having a press conference here to talk about redistricting, and they decided they were going to come and thumb their nose in front of the governor's face. Why would you do that? That is unbelievably disrespectful. It's a provocative act. They're talking about disorder in Los Angeles, and they are the source of the disorder in Los Angeles right now. At this point, this doesn't have anything to do with immigration at all.
Mayor,
this is about causing trouble in our city.
What was the family?
It should be noted that this, what else happened over the last week? Was that DC kind of got the LA treatment. Is that how you would describe it?
Yeah, yeah. We truly, like we said from the beginning, this is an incubator. We are being tested right now. Everything they're trying on us, they will try on you. And it's now shown up to DC. It sucks to see. It sucks to see because they told us 30 days. Obviously, that was a lie. It's August now. Blew past that. And they've now moved on to occupying DC. Trump has also mentioned other big cities, including, you know, Chicago, New York City, Baltimore, Oakland.
What do all those cities have in common? Let's think about real quick.
Real interesting, because there's so much I noticed about that. And I noticed what was missing. For years, the prime example from Trump and the MAGA folks of progressive urban decay was San Francisco. San Francisco was suddenly not on their list.
Why not, Mike? Why would you say that?
How is San Francisco now different from all the other cities that he listed? Oh, wait. They don't have a black mayor anymore. They have a white guy in charge. All the other cities he listed, black mayors.
And all the other cities, I think, we've talked about on the show, have actually shown a demonstrated decrease in violent crime, yes, including D.C., with stats from his own Justice Department that he refuses to take seriously. Or maybe he'll have someone else pull new facts that more closely align with his vision. And ostensibly, what's going on in D.C. is kind of the other growing fear that we've had, you know, we actually talked about a few episodes ago. We've been talking about for months that Trump has had this on his agenda for since Trump won. But basically, like, he doesn't like homeless people being around and it's time to move them out. It's interesting that that wasn't the approach here. I was kind of trying to, like, he never really said that here, although I thought he'd go very quickly into that.
Well, there's more Mexicans here than there are unhoused people. And okay. So, like, I think every city has its own little, like, this is my specific gripe with this city. And so, you know, here it's Latino people, but, like, specifically Mexican people, because he loves to talk about us. And in D.C., I guess it's the unhoused population. In other cities, it's Black people. It's also Black and brown people. You know, it's whatever it is. But this is, like, a very logical conclusion of the very, like, dehumanizing way we have always talked about these communities and the way that we have always policed these communities. So I think what Trump is doing right now is a very logical conclusion to, like, decades and decades of lying about crime statistics and funneling more money into our own local military forces, which are cops. All of this makes sense. And I think that's why it's, like, it can feel so hard to stop what's happening. Like, it feels like a big wave because this wave has been building since Reagan was in office. And now it's come crashing down. And Millennials and Gen Z were, like, trying to stand up. We finally now have, like, more political power and economic power, but now we're in this moment of, like, well, we're all fucking wet from Reagan, derogatory way. So it's, like, very, I don't know, like, I feel like I'm up against a wall in this moment, but it's a very logical conclusion. It's the most extreme conclusion, but it is a very logical conclusion of where our politics have gone and the rhetoric we have used for all of these people for decades and decades. But it's really wild to see it happening, especially somewhere like J&M. Like, we're going to look really fucking ridiculous when these photos are printed in textbooks or wherever textbooks are. Maybe they're not physical anymore. Maybe
they're getting everything's rid of those.
On a clear tablet or whatever. Rachel.
Will we still have schools in 20 years?
Yeah, I think the schools will be
closed. Sure, yeah. You know what? Fair enough. Maybe no one will ever know about this.
Homeschool straight to your ICE assignment at age 18. Oh,
18, eight, yeah, Alyssa.
Sorry, eight.
They want us
junior,
back in the field.
Yeah.
But to the point about the homelessness sweeps, if anybody thinks that that is not going to happen in Los Angeles leading up to the Olympics, they are in deep denial. That is exactly what is going to happen. I think it was going to be hard to stop that even without Trump. But with Trump in office, that is absolutely going to happen.
And they did. And in D.C., there's this video you can watch of the National Guard dismantling an encampment. We're seeing it. Yeah. I don't know how many weeks we have until that's what starts here, too. I think just the fact that they rolled some troops out isn't a sign that anything is going to really change. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there was this astonishing Rolling Stone story that really just lays it all out. We'll put it in the show notes, but, like, what are some of the things in that story that you saw?
I loved how that story was written. I wish the mainstream media was reporting what's happening the same way Rolling Stone did. Its lead was the Trump administration has expanded his military campaign against the United States. Like, that's actually accurate. They talked about how it, quotes, broadens a police state style domestic campaign.
Oh, that's accurate.
I wish the rest of the media would stop tiptoeing around stuff. Rolling Stone just put it exceptionally well.
Yeah. And the LA Times finally did a story about are we worried about Trump at the Olympics? Like, I know they've written about it before, but it was finally like, oh, if only
you fucking woke up after seven, 8 years
of this.
Well,
like,
well, it's interesting that a lot of folks who are speaking up really loudly and forcefully against the Trump administration didn't say anything about the encampment dismantling in D.C.
Well,
and I wonder if Gavin Newsom didn't say anything because it easily could have been a video of a Caltrans site.
Yeah, Caltrans
under his executive direction.
With him.
Gavin's little broom that he carries around just to sweep up. All right, well, so let's not forget the most important part of all of this. We did talk a few weeks ago about how one person died who was in one of the raids in Ventura County on agricultural workers. Mm-hmm. ICE killed one person. And now another person has been killed by ICE. A man was attempting to escape a Home Depot that had been raided in Monrovia, ran onto the 210 and was hit by a driver. So the human cost is real. You know, we talk a lot about the way this is changing people's lives, and it is also ending people's lives. And this will not be the first. And like we said, we don't actually know the status of a lot of people who are in these detention centers. There was a really wild story about how finally our congressional leaders got access to the detention center in downtown, and it was empty. And all those people have been put somewhere, and we don't know.
That's so fucked up. So it's nothing to
it's
say.
It's so fucked up times every episode. So earlier in the episode, we were talking about the safety of kids getting to and from school and how, you know, we have not historically been so good at that here in the city / county of LA, but we're going to focus on the city to start. So the failure of our city, we'll just focus on the city for right now, but this is a regional problem, I would say. There some LA County cities have gotten better at this, but it's our traffic deaths are very high and they're not coming down. This was the year we were supposed to be at Vision Zero, by the way. We're supposed to have zero traffic deaths, and we are very far from that. I believe on track to be over 300 again this year, 300 deaths in the city of LA. So what happens is people are taking to painting their own crosswalks in the city at dangerous intersections. And it's not just to say that a crosswalk is going to instantly make the street or intersection safer, but to draw attention really to the safety concerns that are, you know, happening. So we have to go back to Mike's district again to talk about this. And I know that he did everything he could while he was there to make it better for walkers. Thank you. Stoner Park is a very popular park.
Yeah, so Stoner Park is a very popular park in West LA, just off Sawtelle, a little bit north of Olympic. Heavily programmed. It's got all sorts of youth programs. It's got sort of outdoor fitness equipment.
Super cool name. Who doesn't want to go to Stoner Park?
Yeah. It is heavily used by not just the locals, but by students from nearby schools. A lot of schools that don't have enough of a playground will do programming there. And you know, that is a community that, although folks don't think of the West Side this way, it's a community that has a large Latino, primarily Oaxacan population that heavily uses the park as well. It's where the annual Tejate Festival is held, the Oaxacan Festival. And there are a lot of the border of the park does not even have sidewalks and has not had crosswalks. And coincidentally enough, this is a park where historically there's been a national night out held for the community. But recently there has been a push by some of the members in the community to install crosswalks. And they know that trying to get the city to install crosswalks takes a generation or two. So they did it themselves. And as we learned, the city takes out a crosswalk a lot faster than it puts in a crosswalk. So the city rapidly took them out after a local newspaper did a story on them. And outrage was furious. The media went nuts. The local councilwoman and Mayor Bass engaged, and they put them back in.
But this is the weird part. I just have to first of all, Tracy Park was like, what's the harm? Just leave them there. Which I was like, oh, right. You actually care about this all of a sudden. Okay, great. But then LADOT's stance is, first of all, the DIY crosswalk people. So the official DIY crosswalk group is called Crosswalk Collective. They did not do this one. They were, you know, offered advice and I think, you know, mainly like painting tips or something. But this was done by a member of the local community with local friends. So just to separate that. But what has historically happened is when these crosswalks go in, and they always put them in at the request of the community. And I went to go watch them paint one morning in front of a school in Hollywood. And it was amazing how many people were walking by. First of all, that didn't even know that they were not just official city crews. They wear vests and everything.
No masks.
Yeah, well, it was COVID. Maybe some of them did have those kinds of masks on. But it was amazing how many people were just walking by and saying, thank you so much. This street is so dangerous. This will help so much. Like you really do hear from the community how much they just want painted lines on the street and how much of a difference mm-hmm. that can make. But this was a different group, did it on their own. And the interesting thing here was that they did it kind of like with their own names and faces, right? They didn't do it like secretly and then just kind of let the fallout happen. They all did interviews as their own selves and talked about the changes that they wanted to have made. But DOT's line here is usually that it has to be done professionally to be safe. And it might introduce other safety risks, although I don't think that is necessarily true. And the other kind of like twist in that too is when you upgrade an intersection now under things like HLA, which we passed, which means that you have to adhere mm-hmm. to the city's mobility plan when you're making upgrades to the street, you would have to put in things like a curb cut for the sidewalk to make sure that it's accessible, right? So that's their argument. And like you said, there's not even any sidewalks on part of these properties, right. Which is wild for a park. How can we even not have sidewalks around the outside of a park? We own the property.
And LADOT has had a long history of finding reasons not to do crosswalks. 20 years ago, their argument was it gives people a false sense of security, so we don't want to put them in, which is absolutely
nuts. How dare you feel safe on our streets?
And then you know, even before HLA, the argument was, well, you can't do it without the curb cut because run afoul of Americans with Disabilities Act.
Yeah.
I had a staffer, my Venice deputy, who on Abbot Kinney outside the former Roosterfish Gay Bar, he worked with the community to put in a rainbow colored crosswalk, and they did not do curb cuts, and there was like a whole thing as a result. But this kind of do it yourself, fix it approach has an interesting history in LA, some good and some bad. The two that I think of, one was in 2023, where in Brentwood, former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger was frustrated with what he thought was a pothole or bad street conditions in his neighborhood.
Right.
So he went out and he filled it himself. Turns out, at least one of the two things he filled was a utility trench that the gas company had that they were trying to fix utility lines. So not a very good example of the do-it-yourself approach. But another one, and there's a great video and short documentary, a 10-minute doc we can put in the show notes. But in 2001, I think, there was a sign maker and a street artist who spent months preparing to install a directional sign on the freeway, the 110, guiding people on how to get onto the 5. He did it so well that nobody knew it was a guerrilla act.
And then when they changed the sign, mm-hmm. I wrote about it too, way back in that when they changed the sign, Caltrans like accepted his change. They were like, you're right. Like we're actually going to change the sign, which is so good. Yeah. Amazing story. Richard Ankrom, who I have interviewed and talked to throughout the years, really just an astonishing person. But you're right. Like usually when people point out something that needs to be changed, especially transportation related, you mm-hmm. hope that the agencies are listening. And it's not to say that DOT isn't listening. Of course, they know it's a problem, but they have a budget, mm-hmm. you know, backlog, and they're not able to even like replace the bollard in front of our school that got knocked out, you know, a few months ago. They just don't do it. But what's wild here, and I think what we need to keep in mind here, is that what the somehow this rose to the level of we need to fix this right away because someone from the mayor's office called the Stoner Park Crosswalk group and said, oh, we're so sorry. We're replacing these right away. And I don't think that's ever happened where it's been the mayor's office responded so quickly to something like this and told them that changes would be made. They came and scraped them off and then they came and put them back the quote unquote right way.
Yep.
And to contrast that with what happened in Koreatown, according to the crosswalk installers, it happened the same day. On the same day, the mayor's office called the Stoner Park folks and said, oh, this crosswalk's going back in. In my neighborhood over here in Koreatown, an intersection I use all the time, 4th in New Hampshire, a 9-year-old was killed when a person driving an RV who I believe they confirmed that he was intoxicated was just turning his RV and ran into two kids who were on scooters. One of them was a 9-year-old, Nadir Gavaret, who was killed instantly on the spot. And this happens, like I said, it's the primary cause of death for kids in LA County. This happens a lot. But what was most crushing about this particular death is that changes to this intersection had been proposed in 2011, before he was born. And it had taken this long for the changes to go in. Like, if you remember way back then, in the throes of our bike boom, actually, our bike infrastructure boom, 4th Street through, you know, from Koreatown all the way to like the Grove was meant to be this bikeway where you were supposed to be able to safely travel and have all these awesome interventions like bike signals and roundabouts that would make it like this very safe street for riding your bike. It's still a nice street to ride your bike on, but very few of these changes have gone in. And so the Crosswalk Collective leapt into action here and painted this very beautiful set of crosswalks around the whole intersection now, including this wonderful little panel that has a memoriam with his family were fruit vendors. I'm about to start crying. And so with the family, they painted little fruits in the crosswalk. I don't think DOT is going to be taking that crosswalk out. I have a feeling that would be a pretty bad move. But what's proposed for the intersection is a roundabout, which would have made it impossible for the RV to make the turn that it did on that night.
Can I ask Mike and Alyssa as well, because you obviously have done a lot of reporting on this, what is the value in making people sift through like 5 layers of bullshit to get things like crosswalks and stop signs, purely safety measures, right? Like just things that would help everybody, kids, wheelchair users, et cetera. Like why does it take so long to do things that like, you know, you and I can do today? If I wanted to go paint a crosswalk, I could do it. Buy some paint, whatever. I understand like the, oh, we want it to be done right and measured out and the specifics, whatever, fine. But like, why does it take so long? Like, what is the bureaucracy that stands in between me wanting a crosswalk outside of, you know, down the street from my house or whatever, and then actually having it done? Like, what is the reason that that takes so long?
The same thing with anything in government. It money, bureaucracy, not enough staff to meet the demand of everything that's coming in, right? There's more crosswalk requests than there are staff and resources to get them done. The other thing that's important to note, and I apologize in advance for the wonkiness of this, but crosswalks actually aren't done in paint. The way DOT does it is it's a thermoplastic. They have a cart and it's heated up and melted onto the street. I did a couple of them myself because it was kind of fun. And
it's like Mike's got some work to do. You get back out there.
Yeah, I can go back out there. I'll get in trouble with the union.
Yeah.
But it also is more reflective than paint and lasts longer, right? Paint disappears after, you know, a couple weeks on a heavily traveled street and is not as visible at night, right? So there's that.
Is there a scenario where we, again, volunteers, because LAPD gets all of our money, but is there a way to, like, train up people who are really passionate about crosswalks or whatever the case is, like to just train them up to be able to deploy them in some more type of regular fashion. Because I don't think that, I mean, I don't think anyone thinks it's acceptable for anyone to die because the city doesn't have enough staff or money. But like, if there is a willingness from people to learn to, I mean, I don't know, like apprenticeships, like, I don't know. They're just, there has to, like, what is the solution to this? Because we cannot just keep letting kids get hit by cars and like killed or just not having sidewalks. Like, I just, there has to be something that we can do. And there's a lot of reasons why this one probably rose to the occasion of being this person being on KTLA and, you know, contacted by Tracy Park and the mayor and whoever. But like, how do we replicate this type of urgency all over? Because it is a problem and people are dying and they don't have to, because it's very easily solved.
You're pointing to, I think, the big problem here, which is a well-resourced, louder, wealthier, possibly whiter community on the West Side is going to get changes faster than Koreatown. I mean, just basic bottom line. There's nothing that you can do to fix that, you know, unless you're going to make some more
structural racism.
Yeah, structural, unless you're going to make some more structural changes in the government. But the thing that you're, everything you're naming, I've thought the same thing too. We have this amazing group of volunteers who want to go out and do these things. And also a lot of the urbanist interventions that have been very popular are just painting the street. There's a lot of things in front of schools that are pilot programs. There's things in downtown. There's like little parklets. There's all these little things all over the city that we've done in very, very small incremental changes. We've made very, very small incremental changes to the landscape. And it has just been with regular, like, you know, pavement paint. It hasn't been thermoplast. It's just been like, we're just going to do something for a while and see if it helps. And often it does help a lot, right? But we don't even have enough money to like stripe our bike lanes in green. The city doesn't even have enough money to just even do like the basic things that we need to do. So it's funny that you mentioned things like, yeah, I wish I could learn how to lay down thermoplast or like bust up my curbs so they could come stormwater gardens, or repairing sidewalks is very expensive. But then on the other hand, like, we're supposed to go out and plant trees in our neighborhood and not leave that up to the professionals. So we've already outsourced essentials that I would say are essentials. We're also supposed to get together and pick up the trash when the neighborhood doesn't pick up the trash, or paint over graffiti or something, right? So
what is the cross? Yeah. What's the crosswalk version of Shine LA?
Well, interestingly, I mean, you look at what people are doing when they go out to, and these are the mayor's volunteer events that are leading up to the mega events, right? Which, that's, you know, complicated. But but you're right. Like, how do we start to expand? Like, just, it goes back to what you said at the beginning of the show, Rachel, too, about like our, the way that our definitions of caring for our community and the service we do to our schools. But like, it is like, how do we start to, if people want to do more, how do we help them do more? And then how do we empower the neighborhoods that have the least to get the most?
And it's also like, we're going to spend the money either way. We're either going to spend it paying out lawsuits for people who got injured or to their families if they were killed, or we spend it on fixing the sidewalks and improving and implementing other safety measures that we know save lives. Like, the money will be spent either way. So we're either going to spend it in 10 years when someone gets killed, or we're going to spend it now to prevent that person from being killed. That child didn't need to die, you know? It's crazy.
And yeah, you're making me think too, I'm going to get like my own jackhammer. I'm just going to learn how to start repairing sidewalks myself. I'm just going to, this is just what I'm going to do now. And then I'm going to figure out how to put in curb cuts and get Mike's thermoplast lessons, and I'll be on my way.
I'll do the thermoplast. It was
okay. Fine. You'll do the thermoplast.
I volunteer.
Rachel.
Yeah, I'll project manage because I'm not going to do the physical labor.
Okay, well, one project that we will not be able to do on our own, we will need some help from Metro. And just, we're going to stay on the West Side for one more minute and close out our little transportation segment here. Sepulveda Corridor is finally moving to the next stage. This will be the last in-person meeting if you're hearing this on Monday. I highly recommend you attend. I believe it's in Sherman Oaks, so that should be entertaining for many reasons. since they are one of the communities that has lost its shit, the other one being Bel Air, because this is happening.
Yeah, so this was a project I was really jazzed about when I was on the Metro board. Once called the Sepulveda Pass Project, now known as the Sepulveda Corridor Project, this would create a mass transit line from the San Fernando Valley down to the west side. This phase one that everybody's talking about now is essentially from the valley to the UCLA, West LA area. I always tried to get Metro to think of it as a two-phase project that would eventually get us to LAX. I also got them to stop calling it the Sepulveda Pass Project because I don't know why you would describe a project by its biggest impediment as opposed to its vision.
Sepulveda,
right?
Bypass, maybe, is what we
going
can,
all
we
the way down.
It. Yeah.
Yikes.
And this has been discussed for a long time. They're in the final stages of the public comment period on what were six, what are now five different alternatives, ways of doing it. And Metro will, after these hearings, choose one of these five or six alternatives as a preferred alternative, but then they'll continue to do environmental work on. But this is like, this is a game-changing thing, right? If you can get folks from the Valley to UCLA, right, a major jobs hub, that's a transformative project. And it's not just transformative for the 405, it's transformative for every north-south corridor on the west side, right? Because when the 405 gets congested, Sepulveda and Lincoln get congested. When they get congested, Bundy and Inglewood get congested. So it's a big deal. And, you know, it may get done while I'm still alive, but I'm not sure.
I think I'm feeling good after, yeah, decades of this being in conversation. And it should be noted that, remember Carmageddon? When was that? 2011?
Oh, wow.
That was our last big project mm-hmm. that we did, which they're still kind of doing. There's closures of the 405, I think, coming up like the next few weekends because they just keep trying to tinker with it. But that added a new lane to the 405. Tremendous cost. I believe it was over $1 billion.
And it did nothing.
Instantly got worse. Yeah, it literally made it worse. Like it didn't improve anything. So we can't keep doing anything to the 405. We have to go underneath it. There were six different alternatives that Metro was considering. Three of them were monorail. Three of them were heavy rail. One has been removed from consideration, so don't worry about that. What you have to do by August 30th, when the public comment period will end, is, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes, is tell Metro which alternative or slash option that you prefer. The reason we do not want a monorail is because it would travel along the 405. And if anyone has been on the C slash green line and had to wait for those trains in the middle of the 105 freeway, you understand why this is a horrible idea. It is the most hostile environment for transit riders. It's dirty. It's loud. You feel like you're going to die.
It's slower, doesn't carry as many passengers.
Here you go. Well, monorails in general, yeah, questionable as a solution. So I think we'll rule all those alternatives out, just that's a given. And also the alignments are a little bit strange because you'd actually kind of have to go out of your way to get to the 405 from the job centers and all the other mm-hmm. places where the riders are. So let's get rid of all the monorail alternatives.
And those are options 1 to 3, correct?
Exactly. So with the rest of the options, we have heavy rail that would go underground with a small segment that would be elevated as it popped up on the side of the valley, just to be able to cut costs a little bit and, again, serve the job centers or places where the riders are instead of going out of the way. That's option 4. And then we're going to talk about option 6, alternative 6, which would be completely heavy rail mm-hmm. and completely subway underground. And it would have a slightly different
Slightly different route. It would come down from the valley to UCLA, but then it would jog over west to the Bundy Expo stop in West LA. I prefer that alternative because I envision this as ultimately going to LAX. And I would like to see that route be along Bundy with potential stops on Venice and Culver, Jefferson at Playa Vista, and go into the airport. And I actually think from a transit planning standpoint, if you look at a map, it makes more sense to have it further west because you've already got the Crenshaw line, which is not that much further east than Sepulveda and the 405. So I think it's easier to make an argument for funding the further west you are.
Because 6 would be more expensive, which is one reason So alternative 4, slightly cheaper, and has that little above ground section, which is making the people in Sherman Oaks very upset. And I should also note that all of these would terminate at the Van Nuys Metrolink station at the top. No, I don't think that changes for any of them. So, okay. So no matter what, you need to chime in because August 30th is the last day that comment will be taken. And then we'll be, I guess, finding out the winner. And the most important thing you need to know is you don't want the monorail because the monorail is the preferred option of Fred Rosen, former CEO of Ticketmaster, who lives in Bel Air and has now made it his job to harass every single person involved in this project with these emails that he CCs hundreds and hundreds of people on, explaining why he doesn't want people tunneling like hundreds of feet below his mansion.
Can you imagine making your living destroying one of the most iconic brands in the world and then spending the last 20 years of your life not on a beach, not off the grid, not in a different country, but instead in your home trying to stop a important public transit project because you are too racist to get over yourself? I couldn't imagine being that rich and caring so much about something that will not impact me as someone who will not use the subway. He's not going to use it. Why the hell does he care?
Not to be too crass about it. I mean, I was joking that I won't live to see this being completed. But Fred Rosen's in his 80s. He's not going to really live to see it.
Exactly. Sorry. So not even – I was being generous. I'm sorry. The last five fucking years of his life.
Well
– according to the average.
How twisted is it that one of his criticisms of the rail and the undergrounding is it would be too expensive. How twisted is it that the guy who ran Ticketmaster is talking about something being too expensive?
It's like I need to calm down because I can feel myself like getting so irritated. But it's like we are talking about $15, $16, $17, $20 billion, right? Like we're talking obviously very big numbers. I got to say, folks, money's fake. If we're already talking about $15 billion, we've lost the plot. Like, what's another five? What's another 10 at this point? Because it's already a sunken cost. It's not like the original. Yeah, it's all, it's just like, we're not talking about taking a $1 million project to a $10 billion project. We're already speaking in these big numbers that make no sense. So why not just do, I'm with you, Mike. I am very much option 6. Barrel underground fully. I love a real train system. I would love it to connect to my local station at Expo Bundy. I would love it to eventually connect to the airport like a real city that functions and cares about its community as well as its visitors. But I just, like, I'm sorry to listeners that we might have in Bel Air, but I don't care about what people in Bel Air think. There's 8,000 of you. I don't care. I don't like, and I don't think that your money should so nakedly be used to try and crush projects that would help a majority of this city. Like, that's actually wild to me that you're so deranged, Fred, that you think that your voice should matter more. Like, I'm not talking about the people in Sherman Oaks. Like, that, I get a little bit more. They're like a little more down to earth. You know what I mean? I'm from the Valley too. But Fred Rosen in Bel Air, absolutely not. Just go enjoy the rest of your life.
I don't know if we have any listeners in Bel Air. Probably not our key demographic. But if we do, I bet it's Fred Rosen.
Well,
If you're and I'm talking directly to him. Okay. Pack it up, buddy. Donate your money or don't. I'm not even asking you to do better things with your money. I'm just asking you to not use your money to do this. Like, just enjoy yourself. Go to Hotel Bel Air, have a nice Caesar salad, get a side of fries, and leave everyone else alone. That's what I would do, frankly, if I had that much money. You would never hear from me again. So I don't understand why we have to entertain this person at all.
Rachel.
And hopefully this will all be over as soon as you all send your public comment to Metro by August 30th, letting them know that you don't support Fred Rosen. But just make sure you say 4 or 6. I don't care actually which one you say. You could say 4 or 6.
So before August 30th, before you comment, in our show notes, there will be a link to a Reddit post that does a phenomenal job explaining and showing the different options.
As well as Nick Andert does these amazing videos explaining all sorts of Metro decisions. So we will put that video in as well. You can decide for yourself, but just know, don't do what Fred wants. All right. And apologies to our listeners in Bel Air. Sherman Oaks, we've got you. We will help you. We'll help you through this. We'll try to help you find the decision you want. All right. This is the end of our show. Thank you so much for hanging in there with us. And thank you to all of you for listening. If you want to help us bring more independent voices to California media, like these voices you heard today, you can subscribe at thinkforward.la. Thank you to Olive Greenspan for producing, and we will see you next week.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Except for Fred Rosen.
I wonder what is going on here. Is this space hell or is it paradise? And will we make it worse or make it nice? What's the forecast tonight?